This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 40% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, baby, we're back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up here at 120, we'll dive into some draft talk with Woolchuck, and then we'll roll into... Masterpiece of the week, which Alec has promised. I'm sorry, Alec has promised me that it's going to be exceptional. And that's where the X was, Alec. I'm sorry. The exceptional part was the word I was trying to get out. So stick around for that coming up here at 120. But right now, we just saw the breaking news on Deion Sanders' Colorado contract. Have you seen the numbers on this yet, Woolchuck?
I have.
This is an extension for, it looks like, 5 years.
Yeah.
At $54 million for Deion Sanders, going to make him the highest paid coach in the country. And this is amazing to me because the record doesn't make me think you need to be the highest paid coach.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess whenever they're looking at everything else that he brings, all the attention that he brings to the campus, they're like, it's totally worth it.
Well, the money, the revenue that they're adding for Boulder, 100%. And I saw Brian Howell, who reported this, that covers the Buffs. He's going to earn an average of $10.8 million during his five-year contract. That's triple the average of the highest-paid coach in Colorado history prior to his arrival. That was Carl Durrell at $3.6 million per year. That
really?
Is unbelievable. So, hey, when we first heard the rumors of Deion to the Cowboys and maybe flirting with the NFL, a lot of people thought that this was a financial play to try and get more money from Colorado.
Yeah.
And Deion's talked about, hey, he had a conversation with Jerry, but no offers or anything were made. Well, congratulations. He's been able to parlay that into quite the payday. But they've got a five-star quarterback recruit in Julian Lewis that's going to be battling with Caden Salter, who transferred in from Liberty, who's formerly a Cedar Hill. So, I mean, this is a program he took from, what was it, a win to 4 wins to 9 wins. People might not like Deion, but he has turned around that program, and he has won.
Yeah.
So we'll see without his son how they're able to do.
Did you watch Coach Prime at all? Did you watch the Amazon series? So I watched the first season and then part of the second season. And what he did at Jackson State was special. Like that was very interesting to watch. And he was like, look, I know my boy and I know Travis. And Travis Hunter had to go through an ankle injury before he could get out on the field. And he was ready to get out there and be everything and all that. But he was like, I know what these guys are. And you watch the coaching style, and it reminded you of how you would expect to be coached in football. Mm-hmm. Like that, like I want to be coached. Like I want somebody that's giving me great advice off the field, and somebody that's also pushing me harder and bringing in dudes that have done it. that have done it at a high level. Hall of Famers. I know Warren Sapp's an interesting character. The dude knew how to play the position. And so if I want to learn from somebody, I want to learn from somebody like that. And then that's when talking to Nate, when we go out to do the Cowboys Hour, Nate's like, no, he's not playing coach. He's really coaching football. And that's the only reason I'd show up. He's like, if I was asked to go up there and do it and he was just goofing around, I wouldn't do it. So seeing how they built that program, I was very fascinated though, Zach, to see how they roll over from Shador and Travis and how they say, okay, we're good at recruiting too. You know, mm-hmm. rather than being like, hey, we got these players that we know what they are and we might be able to win, but how do we recruit and add to it? You just pointed out they got some juice to go along with it.
They do. And I'm excited to see, you know, how this next era, you know, because he's had obviously Shador's entire time in college football, Travis Hunter as well.
Yeah.
So now how do they do? And the Big 12's really there for the taking. I mean, they were competitive in year one. You had Arizona State, who ends up winning the conference year one after moving over from the Pac-12. So he's got the opportunity to really lay a foundation of a powerhouse there in the Big 12.
And somebody said, did you see the record before? Yeah, I did see the record before. I'm saying whenever you're the highest paid, I feel like you're Nick Saban. And you've got national championships,
11,
12 wins.
At least make a playoff appearance.
Yeah, maybe. But again, goes back to the university looks at it and says he brings so much extra stuff that's going to basically do what Johnny Manziel did to A&M.
Sure.
And give them anything they need to build whatever they want down there. I am kind of curious though, because they didn't have a great offensive line by any means.
No, not at all.
Sure. Held onto the ball a little bit too long sometimes. Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers like in my mind, but he was also able to run around all over the place. But it does feel like offensive line in college football is kind of unique now compared to, you know, we were coming out of offensive linemen that were just big and they were good at a lot of different things. And now it feels like because of the spread offense and because of the way things are, you're trying to figure out, does this guy or this guy fit into it? Is the offensive line play in college football better, worse than we remember? And I know you're kind of a few years into this right now. Where are you looking at? Do you feel like you're getting great offensive line play in bunches?
I think I'd probably have to say it's not as good as it once was. I think the pass protection, because you do have a lot like the air raid, the spread is taken over. So you got a lot of guys that are now pass blocking 40 something times a game. I think that in certain schools that run more of a pro style, like Iowa, you're always going to be pumping out linemen that are kind of ready to rock. But like last year, we had an elite tackle draft. I mean, there was a reason like Guyton was what, the 7th, 8th tackle that went in the first round, and he goes to the bottom of round one. This year, you don't quite have like Will Campbell, arguably maybe he's the best left tackle. It could be Kelvin Banks, could be Josh Simmons from Ohio State. I don't know if those guys are even in the top five of last year's tackle group.
Okay. Off air one day, I remember you came in and you were uncertain about Will Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other day I heard you say, I don't think we've given him enough love.
Yeah.
What has changed your mind on him, or maybe the reason that you decided to give him more love?
So I hated his stance. Like, he lines up in a 2-point stance and I don't see a guy that could really bend, because for me, I was like, is he a better guard if he needs to kick inside? I also think I've kind of fallen in love with the person.
Okay.
Listening to him talk. This dude is all about football.
He's working
incredibly intelligent.
Yeah.
If you walk in day one and you start at left tackle at LSU and you're playing the big dogs of the SEC. Now, there are times, like if you watch him against South Carolina and Kyle Kennard, who's a really good edge rusher that's probably going to go day two in this draft, gave him a lot of fits. So against speed, you do see some issues there. But he's overall just a clean player.
Okay.
That is really good. And while, like I said, I don't think that I'd put him ahead of, say, the Joe Alts, the Fashanus from last year, the Fuaga, who ended up being really good with New Orleans.
I loved him.
He's a good player. Like, I think he's going to end up being a good 10-year starter in the NFL. Kind of like Eric Fisher, who went number one overall to Kansas City several years back. Like, did he ever meet that potential of being an all-pro? No. But he was a good tackle.
Yep.
Like, I think that's what you're looking at there with Will Campbell.
The other thing, too, I got so amped up as I was getting out of the car. I had to stay in the car to listen when Bryce was talking about Tyron Smith's play where he lets a guy come upfield and then just use that arm to batter him back. Like, it started making me go through, and he's like, if he can add this to his arsenal, then he's going to be – I just started getting really excited about it. So there is some still fun things, but maybe a guy like, you know, that kind of lesson, that kind of thing to add to it. Not all these guys have the full artillery whenever they go into it. This saw this stat that I thought was interesting from opening day yesterday, because there were some, there was a lot of fun ones. Tyler O'Neill, six consecutive years with a home run to lead off opening day. But this is a weird bit of history for the San Francisco Giants. Yesterday, they rolled out their 19th consecutive left fielder. They have tied the record set by the St. Louis Browns from 1937 to 1955. And next year, they would get to 20 if they do not start Helio Ramos in left field.
Helio. So
going back to 2007, when Barry Bonds was the left fielder, from there, Dave Roberts, Fred Lewis, Mark DeRosa, Pat Burrell, Aubrey Huff, Andres Torres, Mike Morse, Nori Aoki, Angel Pagan, or Angel Pagan, Jarrett Parker, Hunter Pence, our friend Hunter Pence, Connor Joe, Alex Dickerson, Austin Slater, Jock Peterson, y'all's friend Jock Peterson.
We love Jock.
Blake Sable, Michael Conforto, and Helio Ramos. 19 straight years going, we don't know who the hell is going to go out there and play left field for us. It's kind of like the Rangers with opening day pitchers for a long time until Eovaldi came along.
Well, the Rangers, I think yesterday I saw the nugget. This is 10 straight years they've had a different left fielder.
Oh, left fielder?
With Wyatt Langford starting.
Really?
Yeah, so hopefully
Evan
Wyatt
started last year. Yeah,
yeah, hopefully Wyatt just holds this down now and it's okay, but they're trying to chase this record as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I hope that Wyatt can do it too. That the y'all's relationship with Jock, I wish that people could understand or could see what I saw, because you guys were doing your interviews, and while y'all were talking to people, I watched Jock Peterson run from locker to locker to go, you guys. And it, by the way, it is on Instagram right now, the best of.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Of Zach and Eric's interviews at spring training, and it was awesome. I loved listening to it yesterday. But I got to watch, the smile on his face. He was like, you just have to. And Luke Jackson was like, why? And he was like, you just have to. Then y'all talked to Luke Jackson for like an hour.
Dude, it was a long
time. That was the wildest thing to see.
I know, and it sucked watching him struggle yesterday. But it was weird because when we first got done with Jock Peterson's interview, I thought he might hate us. And then the next day we come in and he's like, welcoming, oh hey, what's up dudes. And then he's like, hey, you got to get Luke Jackson, and he's looking for Luke, and he brings Luke over, says, hey, you got to do this with these guys. And then Luke disappeared, and then finally we ended up getting him the last day. But you're right, like, he was recruiting people in the clubhouse to do, and he is one of these guys, like I heard you talking about it earlier, where the Rangers need those personalities to kind of keep them loose. Like Jake Berger's a great dude, but Jock Peterson is that guy. Like, if you watched on Instagram yesterday, he put out the morning routine video that's going viral. He is just kind of that goofball dude that's going to make sure, like, no matter if it's you're winning 10 in a row, you're losing 10 in a row, he's going to make sure the vibes are good inside that clubhouse.
Kevin texted me yesterday. He was like, Jock Peterson looks like a Power Ranger right now. Yeah. And he had the lime green everything on. I was like, that's just his style,
that's
baby.
Jock.
That is the way he does it. And yes, from the 817, our season is washed. If we're not 162, 2-0, then we're not.
Hope Kevin's happy.
161-1 in a World Series, I'll accept. All right, yeah. So let's get it started tonight with Lighter Day, and let's get that rolling. Should we be doing submarine tours for the public?
No, not at all. I'd be terrified to go on a submarine.
At least six people were killed on another, nine injured on another tourist submarine that sank on the off the Egypt's Red Sea. Six were critically injured. 29 of the roughly 40 passengers on board were rescued, with those injured taken to local hospitals. The Russian embassy in Egypt said on Facebook that on board were Russian citizens as well, but claimed only four were killed. That being said, I am terrified of, I love water. Mm-hmm. I love water.
You're a beach bum.
I'll swim anywhere. I'm terrified of drowning.
Yeah.
But I'm not terrified of drowning because I feel like I'm a good swimmer. All right. Like, I might be that dude that one day just gets ripped off in a current and is gone because I was like, I'm brave. I can do it. I'm a strong swimmer. I'm going to go save somebody. But I'm terrified of being underwater. And there's a new movie coming out that Tim Collins told us about. Woody Harrelson's in it. It's called The Last Breath. and it's about the dudes that go down under the sea and do build, you know, building and drilling and stuff like that under the ocean. I couldn't do it, man. Like, just, I'm claustrophobic to that point of,
no,
if I can't just swim to the top immediately, I'd be terrified. I'm never taking a submarine tour.
Mm-mm. No, I tried to do the scuba diving thing once and I like went full on panic mode.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I couldn't get the breathing down, like being just submerged under the water. I think I'm just a big wuss, but it freaked me out. Now, I don't know what kind of submarine this was. Maybe what I'm talking about here isn't even a submarine,
mm-hmm.
but I've done these when we went on our cruise a couple years ago to the Bahamas. You're submerged underwater and you're supposed to look around at the fish and stuff that are swimming around you. So I don't know if this is kind of like that. And I didn't even like that. One, I thought it was a waste of time. You couldn't really see much at all mm-hmm. that was swimming around you. And two, it's just like claustrophobia. You're just in a confined little space. There's not a lot of room. The seats aren't comfortable. I'm not going in a damn submarine.
Yeah, this Sinbad Submarines is what it's called. And it's exactly kind of what you're describing. It looks like they go underneath. My son yesterday was talking about getting a job. He's 13. And I was like, go to the rec and be a lifeguard for the summer.
Yeah.
Like that could be, go to the is it Joe Carter Pool? Mm-hmm. Not Joe Carter. Is it Joe Carter?
Joe Pool Lake.
Something Carter Pool out there in
why am I forgetting this?
It
is Joe Carter.
Okay.
Isn't
Jack
it?
Carter.
Jack Carter.
I said, go be a lifeguard. Jack Carter. And he was like, nah. And he goes, I know what I want to do for a career. And I said, what's that? He goes, I want to be a scuba diver that collects golf balls on a golf course. And I,
is that a thing? Are those jobs?
He said he thinks you can make millions doing that, selling the golf balls back to the courses. And I was like, do you know how to scuba? And he was like, no.
And are you for scuba, Ruben?
And you got work to do. You got things to learn before you can do that. Oh. And that's the C Block, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up next here on the KNC Masterpiece, it is time for Masterpiece of the Week. But we'll also do the fastest 6 minutes of draft coverage that you'll ever get. Next on The Fan. Back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. It is Friday, ladies and gentlemen. And coming up later today, Jack Leiter will be on the bump for the Texas Rangers. I do know there are still some tickets available for this weekend. So if you want to go ahead and go to Rangers.com and get your tickets, do it, man. It's awesome because we love the Rangers and we love Rangers baseball. Yesterday was one loss, y'all.
Just one single loss.
It's over.
It's going to be okay. I went through that last night, guys. Mm-hmm. I went through it, woke up this morning, said fresh, clean slate, fresh start. We're back to it. Now let's win the series. All right, let's really focus things down. Michael Young told us yesterday he was usually happier to be on day two than he was day one because day two he could focus on baseball. That's what I expect out of the guys today, so we'll get after that. Now,
lock it in.
Now I want to ask Zach Woolchuk some questions about the draft because I love draft stuff too. I know you and Broadus get locked in, you know, right around the time you've decided the Cowboys are eliminated. And y'all start focusing in on how to rebuild and make better this football team. That being said, there's a lot of other teams out there that are looking for some players. I am kind of curious on where you have Jackson Dart in this draft.
Oh, okay.
Because I liked him, but I also saw some moments where I was like, the hell are you doing throwing four interceptions while your team's trying to get to a college football playoff? So there were some really good moments from Dart. I don't know how I ended up watching this as much Ole Miss football as I did last year, but I think he's risen too much for the Cowboys to do it. And I feel like they're planning to spend a later round pick on him on a quarterback position than they would like a second. Where do you feel Jackson Dart might land, and what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think he's probably going to end up in the first round is kind of what it sounds like right now. Like he's the third quarterback, and I've watched five so far. So he's my quarterback three behind Shador.
Okay.
I mean, he definitely has the arm strength, and there are times where he will stand in there and pressure is in his face and he will deliver an absolute rocket.
Yeah.
And there were times where the ball wasn't always even caught. Now, I love Trey Harris, who is one of his number one targets, but you know, he is a guy you can see, I thought, go through his full field of progressions. Like, I do think he's a guy that you see him going through the field, but his offense was also made easier where he gets the ball out super quick. Like, Lane Kiffin did help him out quite a bit. Shador takes some wicked hits and is just getting back up, and I don't have a toughness question with him. So while I talk about Jackson Dart, he is willing to stay in there and take a hit. There are also some times where I don't know, I saw a little bit of, ooh, do I want to, when it comes to mobility, creating outside the pocket, he doesn't quite have that as well as, say, Cam Ward, Shador do, even like Jalen Milroe. And I get it. You don't know where it's going to go sometimes.
Better
when
than Ewers,
throws.
Right?
Yes, much That's, better. Yeah. And like Ewers will get happy feet. Like Jackson Dart is a much better pocket passer than what Quinn Ewers is. But his ability to create off structure and off platform, which we've seen in the NFL, you've really got to be able to do. I think there are some fair question marks there. And also, I don't know that he always sees like zone coverage. I think that's what you're talking about, where he gets in trouble with the interceptions.
How do you feel about quarterback face paint? Because it always kind of makes me go, nah, whenever I see quarterback face paint.
I don't mind it.
You don't mind it? Okay.
Now, if it's Brock Hoffman style, where we're literally going like pretty much the full face. But just a little bit of eye black here, I think we're okay with that.
I think he does the cross and really big stuff underneath one eye. And I'm always like,
You're going to take him off the board?
He was Zach Wilson. When I first saw that I was like, no. And then I watch, you know, Avery. All my kids are in high school. I'm seeing a lot of the high school kids. They're all doing it. So maybe it's just old man Corey starting to come out in me just a little bit. How much do pro days affect your feel on what guys are?
So if I was there, I'd probably have more of a, hey, it'll impact it. I don't get to go.
You're not
and
there
I don't
to get socialize though?
No, and I don't get the video. So like I'm waiting to hear back and get the reports, and we have, you know, Nick Harris has been out there. He went to the A&M Pro Day, did a great job. Tommy Arish, who's on the draft show with us, went out to Texas. So I'm pretty much like beholden on those individuals to give me back the feedback. And then you'll hear afterwards, hey, you know, who was there in terms of coaches? I think that's what's really important. And talking with Brian about this, like which coaches are there? And then if the coaches end up doing some of the individual workouts, like I was told at LSU, some of the Cowboys staff put Mason Taylor, their tight end, through the workout. Like that's interesting to me.
Okay, yeah.
Like you used to see Dan Quinn go out on the road and he's like working out specific defensive linemen, right? So are you going to like Shoddy's out there right now? You've got a lot of the other scouting department, Will McClay's, I think they're at Ole Miss today. But who are they working out individually? I think that's one where it gives you kind of maybe a better understanding of players they could be interested in. For me, I really can only rely on the tape and then kind of just trying to talk and make connections around the league to find out more about the players, like the character background of them, which does make a big difference.
Absolutely it does.
But unfortunately, not being able to have these interviews, not being able to go to the combine or to the pro days, I can't really gain a whole lot from that stuff.
Maybe combine will be on slate at some point. Maybe it will be. I heard you the other day say you felt comfortable second round cornerback.
Yeah.
And I started thinking to myself, I was like, I feel like this is almost the third year I've heard him say that. Because I remember a couple of years ago, we were sitting in Jared's hotel room as we were getting ready for, you know, spring training. And you were like, no, man, there's plenty of cornerbacks. And it feels like the cornerback play is starting to become more prevalent in college. But you're that comfortable with this year again? And how deep is that? Because Kevin said that he had a list that said they were seventh at position wise, being as far as depth goes. But are they real deep or is it first two rounds deep?
I think it's three rounds.
Okay.
You know, and fourth round, you might be able to find a guy that you kind of like, but I really do. The second round is kind of where I'm thinking you might end up being able to get like a blue star special, where you get a guy that's got injury issues that could fall to you. Now, Azaray Thomas is a name to watch, the Florida State corner whose brother's with Wanye Thomas, who's already on the roster, and he's a big physical kid that can also set the edge in the run game. I do like Wanye Thomas's game a lot, but this is where I'd be fascinated if Siobhan Revelle, the cornerback from East Carolina, who's coming off an ACL, he ran today. His 40 was anywhere from 4.45 to 4.5 that was clocked in.
All right.
From people in attendance. I saw Jordan Reed put that out there. But he might be the best corner in the draft for me if he wasn't coming off of a torn ACL. 6'2", 200. He's a long press corner that runs well. He's sticky in coverage. He's a true boundary physical player. Might get a little grabby at times. Like I think Al Harris would have loved this dude if he was still here. I don't know how much the Cowboys would be into him. I think they do have a 30 visit scheduled. And then you got Benjamin Morrison, who's a corner out of Notre Dame, that I think has first round tape, but he's got a bad hip. and how can I take a corner that's got a bum hip? Is that something that's going to end up hurting him at the next level? And then Amos, the cornerback from Ole Miss, I love, 6'1", 190. So in the second round, you've kind of got a sweet spot. But then in round three, you've got guys like Quincy Riley, the cornerback from Louisville, 5'11", 194, fluid hips, good short area quickness, has good recovery speed, can attack the ball at the catch point. But I really love Jacob Parrish, who I think would be the perfect Jordan Lewis replacement. 5'10", 191. This dude is an absolute pit bull the way he plays the position. Started 24 games over his 38 games that he played over three seasons in Manhattan at K-State. And I'm a huge fan of this kid. The quick feet, he'll hit you. He's got great play recognition when it comes to the screen game. I love him. He's one of my favorite players in the draft, period. He just doesn't necessarily have the size. So Noel Williams is another corner out of Cal who led the league, led college football in interceptions. His hometown's actually Oxnard.
There we go.
So he'd love it if he was. So there's a lot of corners day two. I'm cool with taking a corner there because I do have some questions, and I might totally be wrong. We might be wrong on Will Johnson, the corner out of Michigan. For whatever reason, we don't love him. I think that's kind of a consensus on the draft. It's not like we don't like the player, but to take him at 12 feels a little bit rushed.
That's the name. I thought it was Will Campbell. It was Will Johnson.
Will Johnson.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, like the long, like he just, last year was a rough year for him. He was banged up. It might have just been injuries. 2 years ago, he was awesome when they won the national championship. Maybe I'm overthinking it when it comes to Will Johnson, and he's going to end up just being an awesome player. The measurables are very similar to Patrick Surtain, but I thought the tape was way better for Surtain coming out of Alabama than Will Johnson.
Yeah, he looked amazing on tape coming out. That you'll get more of that on the G-Bag Nation from Zach Wolchuk, and the only two people from Oxnard who you just said, Anderson Pack. Those are the only two famous people from Oxnard.
There we go, Noel Williams and Anderson Pack.
Look at that. All right, coming up right now. It's time for Masterpiece of the Week.
Gentlemen, how are we today?
Well, we made it, Alec. We made it all the way.
We did make it all the way.
Almost there.
Yeah, well, Kevin kind of crapped out.
What a quitter.
Yeah, that's not right, man.
He just, on his way out, he was just like, he didn't even thank Wolchuk.
Didn't even say anything.
So ungrateful.
It's
time for Masterpiece of the Week. We're going to revisit some of the wild, wacky, and very oftentimes concerning things said on this very program. And we do have a tradition here that is not going to help out Kevin Hagland. We pick on people who are not here to defend themselves. So,
which is why a couple weeks ago, Zach, I let you work 3 days on our show and made sure I was back so they didn't pick on me too much for Masterpiece of the Week.
That was a smart play.
Yeah, and then we picked on you first. So, yeah,
it's
you know,
okay.
It's tradition. So,
I know I've said a lot of weird things.
Kevin said this, a defiant statement.
I don't need another baby mama.
That is true. Because he mentioned yesterday that he might have a third baby with another, like, another mom. And we were kind of panicked and freaked out about this. Kinda is
Zach Wilson,
or maybe somebody was texting that in. Maybe they were text. No, it wasn't. He wasn't hunting. It was like he likes to.
He was prospecting.
He likes first times. You know, first time moms is what he's trying to make.
All right,
yeah, but
on his Bill Belichick,
his flight's at 2, so he's probably already on the plane right now. So we can make as many jokes as we want.
Oh, absolutely. Well, he's got the app.
Just
you know?
Go ahead and get him.
I love Jess.
Just razz him.
He's amazing.
Just razz him.
Let's see. Had a couple of crosstalk moments from your radio wife, Wolchuk.
Ooh, perfect.
Eric Chiafalo said this.
Okay. He's the type of guy you can't expect perfection from.
Yeah,
and if he's not giving it to you, you're kind of side-eyeing him.
Yeah. Do we have the Anthony Davis line from Kevin?
Yep, we're going to get to that. Trust me.
So that's that coupled with that is very, he's not giving it to
you. I've gotten the side eye from Eric plenty of times.
Because you're not giving it to
him. He expected the perfection. Maybe I was off that day.
Yeah, I understand.
It happens sometimes. You're not like totally feeling
every single one of us.
Yeah, we've all been there.
You saw the Rangers yesterday.
Well, I feel like this is a good tie-in. This one is just, I labeled these things really short. So I just put Corey-Balls.
Where they have artifacts like Wyatt Langford's cycle helmet, one of Nolan Ryan's balls.
One of Nolan Ryan's balls.
You know, the bad thing about that is I think there's a huge gap in audio, like where I was still trying to figure out what I was going to say next. And so it did just sound like that. But one of the balls from his no-hitter.
Mm-hmm.
It was they have that available. You can hold and touch a no-hitter baseball. Mm. And that's the way I should have said it.
Yeah.
But I'm an idiot. Sometimes.
After you scramble, Derek goes, that's gross.
Yeah.
It's like we're going to the Lance Armstrong Museum. There's the ball.
Yeah, there's the one.
There
right
it is.
There.
That was the sacrificial lamb.
They had a home run bat from Pudge there. Sick. It was like, I think he hit two or three home runs in a game with that bat. So there's some really cool stuff.
Speaking of Derek Holland, he had a moment of his own.
I also think as well, don't touch it.
Okay.
Don't touch it. Yeah, you guys were talking about the short pants. I wasn't sure what was happening there in that moment. Were you trying to help him?
He had on shorts under his shorts. So he had on, so he just came from training.
Okay.
So he had
like
on
the compression shorts on.
And he was just saying they were riding up on him. I was trying to move, because we had.
You were trying to tug.
No, I was not. He had his laptop, which was not charging. He had an iPad, which he didn't know the password for.
He
had another iPad that we had for him. And I was trying to move that one. And he was like, don't touch it. Because he didn't know what he was doing with all the other electronics.
So it wasn't actually like grabbing of the shorts.
It was not grabbing his shorts.
It was an electronic device.
I will tell you, though.
You have thought about
it. That dude's in fantastic shape.
Yeah.
He's doing, his training has done him well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if we're sticking on the wave of former Rangers.
That dude's got a fat ass.
He does have a dumpy.
That's with a PH.
Mm-hmm. Not dumpy. Dumpy.
I don't like what's happening. All right. Speaking of former Rangers, you guys had Ian Kinsler on yesterday. And he said this.
You got to get it in there, huh?
All right. That's when Derek told me he had to eat the mic. And Ian said, yeah, I really get it. Dude, I'll tell you this. Derek and Ian and Michael Young, those guys like to joke. Like, they have jokes amongst each other that you can tell they had
you
a really
good. You can tell.
Yes.
Special relationship.
Yeah.
Unique vibes.
It's
it
is, and it's kind of awesome to watch and be like, hey, they're just like us, too. Like, they
one
goof
of the
around.
Boys.
Yeah. They probably would do a show just like this, you know?
Yeah. And you know who likes to joke? Maxwell Jacob Friedman. He was on the show with you guys at 1 o'clock yesterday. If you missed it, I advise you go to the 105.3 The Fan podcast page and revisit that conversation, because it was all over the place. And MJF said this.
I don't even want to get into you. I mean, my God, you're a big boy, huh?
Oh.
Yeah. I think that was Kevin's biggest fear, was that he would just start taking shots at our physical appearances.
Oh, no.
Yep. He didn't care, dude. Like, in break, he was like, so are you married to that chick right there? What about that chick? What about her? We had to dump him two times, almost three.
Yeah.
He did a Blake moment where he said a word and then was like, no, you can say it. And then said it again and it again. And we were like, no, you cannot say that. But yeah, dude.
Yeah.
That's a stressful deal. Next thing you know, you run out of the dump.
Yep.
Yeah.
No dump left.
Yeah, I was terrified, but entertained at the same time. Mm. And speaking about one of those words that he doubled down on and then realized he can't say, here's how he cleaned it up.
I touched the fat man's breast.
Oh, my God.
Who was the fat man's breast?
I'm just the fat man.
That's all we needed to know.
Sorry, this is just
there could have been
breast.
Any fat man there, and he was talking
that
about
in its
that.
Own is actually pretty incredible. Yeah. I touched the fat man's breast.
He's got
I just
it
touched
out
it and walked
people,
off.
Man. He's got it out for people that are not the same shape as him, because he definitely pointed at a woman that he was trying to accuse of being Kevin's wife. He's like, what about that lady with the muffin top over there? I was like, jeez, man.
Him, and Gavin, so, and Eric would have a ball together.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, jeez. MJF also said this.
Best sandwich you ever been in, right?
Yes. Sandwich I've ever been in.
That was the moment Kevin broke him.
He lost it.
He broke then, and somebody pointed out he broke whenever I said something about the Mets and what the, you know, growing up being a Mets fan. But he never seen him break character before. But Kevin got him with the best sandwich you've ever been in.
That's amazing.
See,
well done, Hagee.
I love sandwiches.
Oh, me too. Great food.
Jersey Mike's.
Love when you cut them diagonally too.
Diagonal sandwiches are the best.
So
there's more
better.
Sandwich.
Corey, the moment you've really been waiting for. It's not the last thing we have, though, but the moment you've been waiting for.
He's going to take it from some dude in the third row.
Oh.
He wants to see Anthony Davis play right field. And he was saying,
sure.
Can you imagine Anthony Davis going up and
because
a home run ball
is.
And he reaches up and gets it?
Yeah.
That being said, the way he said it. One more time. Can I hear that?
Yeah, let's see here.
He's going to take it from some dude in the third row.
And he could have been talking about anybody on this station. I felt like the way Kevin talks about people on this station.
On the third row.
Yeah.
I just love
just taking it.
It's so extravagant. Everything he says is with such purpose.
Oh, yeah.
So it makes it that much worse when he says something stupid, because then you can really use it against him.
Yep.
I got a point. This happened today.
Oh, no.
James and I actually started tearing up laughing at this. It's so stupid.
You are going to be eaten by one of those toy hippos.
Wait for it.
Hungry, hungry hippos. Just
KNC Masterpiece.
That was always the sound I imagined.
Awesome. Because I thought the same thing. I would have said hungry, hungry hippos too. Yeah. And then you get that noise from Kevin. That is gold.
That was Corey.
That was you. Okay, do it again for me.
Oh, man. Hungry, hungry hippos is a fun game until you lose all the marbles.
Yeah.
Hungry, hungry hippos.
That's great.
Oh, that's good stuff there.
That's the dumbest thing ever. All right, it's time to vote.
Okay, all right, so time to vote. I'm going to go with what happened with the large man's chess piece. That's my vote.
You got to get it in there, huh?
That was the wrong one. I can't see through the tears in my eyes.
Oh, yeah, he is going to
take it from some dude in the third row.
There we go. Well, Chuck.
I think I got to go with Hungry Hippos.
Yes, and that's going to be my vote, too. Here we go.
Well done.
You are going to be eaten by one of those toy hippos.
Hungry, hungry hippos. I would be terrified if they were coming at me like that.
The inflection's so good.
Great stuff, Alec. Thank you very much for your work today, sir. And right now, it is time to talk and chit-chat with the fellas from the G-Bag Nation next on The Fan. We're back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan, getting ready to turn the reins over to the G-Bag Nation. And we are now, courtesy of D&M Leasing, in the middle of crosstalk with the G-Bag Nation. Gentlemen, how we doing?
Terrific, Majors. How the heck are you?
It's been a great day.
Happy Friday.
It's been a very fun Friday. And I think the even more exciting part about it is Jack Leiter's on the bump tonight. I know that gets y'all out of here about 30 minutes early tonight. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, buddy.
I believe so.
All right.
Yeah, I think that's
nice
how that works. Yeah, 6:30.
Did y'all get a chance to listen to the pregame presentation yesterday?
Watched a lot of the pregame on television because I was still at home before I came in here, and then listened while kind of watching in studio.
Yeah.
So, yeah, took it all in.
What'd you think about the new Ranger Sports Network and how it looked? I like the sports the score bug in the bottom and how they use that a little bit.
Amazing. I think they modernized the presentation. You know, I'm so proud of Jared that he's grown into this role. He's so much more than a pre and post game show host. You can see how amazing and talented he is in his Sandlot Children's Charity. Like, his ability to organize and do huge things is without question. You know, but hey, I shoot from the hip here. I thought it was weird to hear the TV sounds over the radio.
Okay.
Maybe I'll get used to that.
Gotcha.
Okay, but I've been looking for Spittle today. Wanted to run it by him here. Maybe we could get a feed without the TV sounds.
There were a couple of moments yesterday where Bassick was doing something in the pregame, and he was saying something, and you could tell there was a VO. Like, you could tell there was TV, because he'd say, and you can see here. And I was like, no, I can't. I'm driving in my car right now.
Yeah. I don't mind that. But, you know, because I'm kind of used to that, and
Dallas
I think it kind of works with this YouTube generation that has a YouTube video on in the background, and people are talking about what they see with their visuals, but we're okay with that now.
Yeah.
You know, that used to be something you wouldn't want to do in radio. Don't draw attention to something that the audience can't see. I think those lines are being great, though, Majors.
Yeah, I got a point there.
I like what they're doing here.
And what brought us, I know you love to listen.
I listened to the whole game.
How did, like,
I listened all the way through. I did not take in the television at all.
I enjoyed on the pregame the announcements with Chuck Morgan.
I went up to the I'm a first pitch guy.
Okay.
When Eric told me the weather conditions outside and all that, and roof closed, and we're playing baseball, that's when I turned it on.
Yeah, that was
I'm weird, and I'm on pre and post game shows. I just cannot stand pre and post game shows.
I get that. I think it was when I was at North Texas at Hank Dickinson's class.
Listening to it, though.
And Brad Sham came in to talk. And that's when the moment that I realized how spoiled we are in DFW and sports radio, the play-by-play.
Mm-hmm.
Because Brad was just going on and on about his favorite broadcaster, Eric Nadel. And he was just like, you know, the way he describes the shirt underneath his jersey, the pinstripe down the leg, like he paints a complete picture for you.
Yeah. The red glove.
Right, yeah, he was talking about the gloves. Exactly. Was saying, you know, where the guy stands on the rubber.
Stands erect in his stance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you intentionally trying to?
No, he's trying to do a little spoof from yesterday's draft show where I said the player was erect. the way his stance is.
They do use it a lot, though, in baseball. They
good do. Viral video.
Yeah. That just, you know, there's some terms in sports, man. You just, they cross over to Genty whatever your mind wants to take you to.
Now, I know y'all were talking about things y'all are probably going to get into here on the G-Bag Nation in just a little bit, but I was kind of curious. I'm not going to get into your audio, Zach, but how many top flight receivers are there in this draft? First round, second round guys?
Three.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, I have three first round grades, if that's your ask.
Okay. All right. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, with McMillan, I like Burden. People tell you Burden's a terrible human being, I guess. You know, they'll say things that, like, you know, and then his coach had to come out and say, no, this guy works hard and does this and does that. So, you know, but if you watch the tape, Luther Burden makes a lot of plays.
It's weird. Like, a knock on a receiver is he's a diva.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of, that comes with the territory the of being a receiver?
Yeah. Yeah.
So to me,
quarterbacks are a little off.
I've got Burden at the top of the second round, but I do have McMillan, Igbuka, and Matthew Golden and Travis Hunter. But I mean, I've got Hunter listed as both a corner and receiver. He's my number two receiver behind Ted.
I would be fascinated to ask, if I could ask NFL scouts one question and their final board, do they actually have Hunter as the best corner or best wide receiver? I wonder if he is on some people's board, not the actual best one.
But because maybe he's capable of doing both, he gets popped up a little higher. Shohei.
This guy, and I keep talking about this, and he's a tremendous corner. Don't get me wrong. He's 185 pounds, though. You know, when you start to talk about wear and tear on a guy, and he plays both ways and stuff, but you worry about him if he's going to play both ways. Is he going to get smaller as the season goes along? And then does his desire to be, you know, one or the other, like, you know, the corner part, you're going to need him to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's gets lighter and lighter and is not willing to tackle, then, you know, the coverage aspect of it is fine. Great. But, you know, you need these guys to play at both the tackling part and the coverage part.
Conversation you won't find anywhere else in DFW radio. Where are we going today with the show?
It's a big Friday, majors.
Nice.
Scott Docterman of The Athletic is going to join us at 3:20. Of course, we'll begin to roll out the Pure Gold, as always. Thanks for asking.
Yes.
Right out of the gates here at 2 o'clock. But Docterman's a bracketologist of sorts. He'll be talking tournament with you at 3:20. David Murphy at 4 o'clock talking Rangers. Kevin Harlan at 4:15 on the call last night.
Awesome.
For Tech's comeback.
He's always amazing, man. Always love Kevin Harlan. All right, we've been the KNC Masterpiece. We'll be back on Monday rolling and rocking with you. Until then, you've been Masterpiece. Go get Rangers.
Hungry.